the following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
Good night, and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight, with Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Okay, well, welcome to a Tuesday. You'll notice I didn't start the show with some, you know, funny song parody or anything today because it's not the time or place for it. We will get back to that tomorrow. But we have things we need to talk about today. Now, yesterday on the program, I read to you a little bit. I read some excerpts of a thread that I read on Go Figure Threads. It's a shitter alternative, in case you're wondering. Anyway, threads.net is where you can get that. And I came upon this man who I had not heard of before. And but I saw he was writing about the Israeli Gaza war and that he was a Palestinian American. And the further I got into his thread, the more I said, I agree with everything this man says. I need to talk to him. So, I'm still learning about all the newfangled social media networks. And I actually looked him up on Shitter and saw that his account had been suspended. And I thought, okay, well, we're on good ground here. And then I figured because he was on Threads, which is part of Meta, and I don't know how to send a direct message on Threads, I messaged him on Facebook and he answered me, even though he doesn't really post on Facebook. But we finally connected and he agreed to join me here today. And I'm thrilled to welcome Mo Husseini to the show. Mo, thank you so much for being here today. I really appreciate it.
I appreciate being here as well. The account that's suspended on Twitter isn't mine, by the way. It's a different name.
I gotcha.
It's a person using the name, but the reason you've never heard of me, Nicole, is I'm pretty much nobody I don't speak for anybody. I'm not trying to speak for Palestinian Americans, and mm-hmm. I'm not trying to speak for anyone in the Middle East. I mean, fundamentally, I think in a lot of ways, what I'm trying to do is be a person that is centering what I call radical decency more than anything else. And I think that we could do with a lot more of it, I guess.
We absolutely could. You know, I try to seek out common ground. And in the email where I introduced myself to you, I did mention a few interviews I've had in the past, everyone from Uri Avnery, who was the founder of Gush Shalom, the far left Israeli peace movement, I'm drawing a blank on his name again. The man who wrote Letters to My Palestinian Neighbor.
Yossi Halevi.
Yossi Halevi. What a brilliant man. And I just so enjoyed speaking with him. And I've actually reached out to him a few times since October 7th and haven't heard back. But, I get it. No problem there. I get he's got his own shit to deal with right now, as do we all, I think. Yep. So anyway, regardless of all that, here's the bottom line. Something that you wrote in your piece really stood out to me. It was your description of who you are. You said, and I'm looking for the exact quote here. You said, I'm a Palestinian American. And now I'm not finding it. Do you want to introduce yourself? Tell us a little bit about who you are and why you wrote this?
I think the part that you're referring to is, I'm an incredibly proud Palestinian American. I make no apologies for it. And I make no apologies for the right of Palestinians to have freedom, security, and self-determination. I think for me, what I struggle with, honestly, is looking at that statement as a zero-sum statement, which mm-hmm. is to say that my right to freedom, security, and self-determination somehow abnegates the right of Jews to have freedom, security, and self-determination. And I think that more of a focus on how to solve for both parts of the equation will get us further than engaging in a way that fundamentally negates, you know, both the traumas and the hopes and the fears and the desires of the other, if that mm-hmm. makes sense. I think that a lot of what I struggle with as a human is, you know, there's this concept in Buddhism that life is suffering. And I think that that's true in a lot of ways. And mm-hmm. in I think that our job as humans fundamentally is to figure out a way to lessen the net suffering in the world, if that makes sense. And I don't know how you do that by creating more suffering. And that's just really it for me. Right. I think that at its basis is where it's at. Sorry, I ramble, so feel free to make hand signals.
Hey, no problem. This is, you know, this we've got an hour or as much of it as we want to use to say whatever we want to say. I purposely wanted just first to have a conversation. Sure. The other part of what you said that struck a chord with me is I'm paraphrasing because I can't find the passage, of course, in front of me, but that you're non-religious. Right. You're not a religious person. You are a Palestinian American. Well, it's same with me. I'm an atheist Jew is how I describe myself.
Sure.
And I've always been very critical of the Netanyahu regime. I've been very sympathetic to the cause of the people living in Gaza. I've been critical of Israel's actions on the West Bank. I think it's horrific. But by the same token, I was very outspoken when Donald Trump was in charge here. I wouldn't write off all of the United States because Donald Trump was a dictatorial, horrific leader who I didn't support on any issue at all. I make those distinctions. Well, just as you were born in the States, you're an American.
No, actually, you weren't. It's funny because I've gotten a fair amount of pushback from, you know, from people who'll say things like, well, it's because you're like a westernized Palestinian and you don't get it and all this other stuff. But I actually grew up in the Middle East.
Oh, did you?
I speak Arabic I love the Middle East. I think it's an amazing place. I very much consider myself to be an American, my Palestinian identity notwithstanding. But, you know, I think that I grew up in a lot of ways with a lot of privilege. I don't deny that part of my life in any way, and I'm very conscious of that privilege. But I think that I grew up in a life that straddled a lot of kind of exposure to Europe and to the States as a young man. And here's the thing. I think it is really easy to hate people you don't know.
That's true.
I think it is really easy to hate an abstraction. I think that a lot of I fall prey to it sometimes, but it is very easy to have an opinion about people whom you've never met or groups of people that you've never met. And I think that for me, exposure to different kinds of people and, certainly my early career in the entertainment business meant that I met a lot of Jewish folks. Exposure to people who you might consider your enemies or having different viewpoints than you or whatever, you quickly realize that the commonalities that group you together are far, far more than the things that separate you. I mean, I think for me, the first kind of moment of realizing how similar and this is going to sound incredibly stupid, so I apologize in advance, but like, for me, the first moment of realizing how close Arabs and Jews are to each other was as a teenager in Amman, Jordan, watching Israeli Sesame Street, which let me just say that we were not fully sober at the time, but you know, the language is incredibly similar, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you start to hear people doing rudimentary Hebrew and you're listening to it and you're like, wait, that's almost Arabic.
Yeah.
And, you know, you start to realize that fundamentally we're coming from a very similar historical background and from a very similar historical place. And, you know, you start to look into all kinds of things and you realize that the things that really join us together are far greater than the things that separate us. And ultimately, it's not a comforting thought. And that may sound counterintuitive in the sense that it's not comforting to realize that that the things you see in the other are probably reflected in your own group. And,
oh, sure.
And vice versa.
Oh, right? Sure.
You know, I find it interesting is the wrong word, and amusing is the wrong word, because it's fundamentally sad. But you hear a lot of you know, Israelis or people who support Israel say things that fundamentally kind of question the right of Palestinians to have a connection to the land, or right. Well, you're all Arab invaders, or you have no connection to the land, or we were here first, and all this other kind of thing. And then you see it reflected in the same kind of way when Palestinians do the same things to Israelis. Mm-hmm. And I think that for me, there may have been a moment where the question of whether to establish a Jewish homeland in Israel was a salient question, but that time, like, I don't think literally anybody we know who is alive
right.
Back then is still alive, right? Like, mm-hmm. I think that it's a weirdly counterproductive argument. It doesn't make any sense. It's like arguing about whether you should have had a baby.
Yes.
It's like, well, you had a baby, right?
Yeah.
Like, let's deal with
the reality as it is today. The situation we're dealing with, which frankly is untenable. What's going on now is just horrible. And not only are we not understanding one another, we are in many instances talking past one another. I want to share something with you that there's an article out today in Variety magazine. I just happened to see it because I read the music. My friend Chris Willman writes there, and he's got great music articles all the time. And I come across this one about Amy Schumer. I'll just read a few paragraphs for you. Amy Schumer was in The Zone. This was in March when she was filming on the street in Brooklyn for her upcoming movie, blah, blah, blah. She emerged from a subway station while answering a phone call and was interrupted by a stranger shouting at her from the sidewalk, quote, "Fuck you, Amy Schumer. You're a Zionist. You love genocide." Disruptions of the four-letter variety aren't unusual in raucous places like New York, though they're usually less pointed. Schumer didn't break character, refusing to stop working as the woman carried on. The actress finished the scene, finally picked up her stuff, and went home to her husband and their four-year-old son. And I'm editing. I'm going past.
Sure.
In this instance, she said, "Well, I can't help it. A lot of people can't help it, but I've never been able to." She says of her tendency to sound off, knowing it'll trigger people. "But I also want to be helpful. Do you know what I mean?" In this instance, she means the current discourse on the Middle East feels one-sided to her, and she'd like to change that. Quote, "The focus is so razor sharp on Jewish people, but not on Hamas. It's very strange. So I'd recommend people read a book, Israel, A Simple Guide to the Most Misunderstood Country on Earth by Noah Tishby, or anything Jewish people wrote most everything down," end quote. And then take the topic of the Israel-Hamas war. Since the October 7th attacks, Schumer has been scrutinized for her social media posts, which some feel conflate Palestinians with Hamas. She was also criticized for sharing a video of Martin Luther King Jr. Condemning anti-Semitism and saying that Israel has the right to exist. Bernice King, the activist's daughter responded to Schumer's post by saying that while she and her father were against anti-Semitism, she was, quote, certain he would call for Israel's bombing of Palestinians to cease, for hostages to be released, and for us to work for true peace, which includes justice. And then the article goes on in other ways. But see, what Amy Schumer is experienced here is, to a lesser extent, obviously, the same thing I'm experiencing and most American Jews that I know of are experiencing, whether we're vocal or not. Now, I'm pretty vocal on the show about what I've said, but everything that I say seems to be misconstrued by some people who insist on calling me a genocider, as if that's a word, or, you know, a murderer, a baby killer. I mean, the stuff that's been lodged at me because I said October 7th viscerally affected me. It flipped a switch in my brain. And I'll tell you something. Last night, we watched this new film that's available on YouTube. It's by Sheryl Sandberg. She went over there to, as she said, pay witness. And it's the aftermath. It's the attacks. And it really shines a spotlight of the rapes, the sexual assaults of women by members of Hamas on October 7th. And she doesn't even take it to the next level, which is why aren't the women of the world screaming about this, but just that it happened and to pay witness. And for someone like me, I look at, you know, I say it's all horrible what's going on, but I wonder why the lack of seemingly compassion for these women. And I know, you know, as a Jew and someone who doesn't practice, my family never practiced Judaism. I'm not religious. I scoff. I hate organized religion. I think it is, you know, in most cases, the cause of every war. But this is not about that. It's about, you know, you have your heritage. And I yes, you were born overseas, but you consider yourself American. I'm American. Judaism is a small part of me, but I grew up with those stories. I know what the Holocaust was. And you graciously talk about the history of the Jews as some of the most persecuted people throughout history. And you get it. I get it. What I don't understand is why so many don't. And they won't hear the other side.
Respectfully, I guess I'll say this, and I think that for most Palestinians, and this is particularly true when you start to get into things like mainstream media and reportage, you know, coming out of the region, feel the mirror of exactly what you said, mm-hmm. right? So, right. So you know, I think, you know, and once again, this is it's a minefield for discussion, and it's not a minefield for discussion because my thoughts are unclear about it. It's a minefield for discussion because, let me put it this way. Sorry, this is probably not compelling radio.
No, it's an honest conversation.
Let me put it this way. People like to be outraged, and this is going to sound counterintuitive, but people like to be oppressed on some level. I think it is an easier position to make yourself feel better when you center all of the bad things that have been done to you. I think that's true for both sides. I think that's true for everybody. I don't think it's just a Palestinian or an Israeli thing. I think the Israeli perspective historically in the United States up until recently has had primacy. Mm-hmm. Right. I think that there is a cleaner line to hearing the Israeli story in American culture historically.
Yes.
And that has changed in the past few years quite dramatically. But a lot of that is BB, quite honestly, but that has changed. And that has changed a lot with younger people. Mm-hmm. But I think what the response to, you know, your comments about the hostages or the sexual assaults or any of those things, Palestinians will tell you that that's also been happening to us. And where is the, you know, where is the world's outrage, right? And once again, I'm not trying to center or create a moral calculus of suffering, because it's stupid. It doesn't do anything.
Right. It's not a competition, as you said. It is not.
Yeah, no, it isn't. I mean, trauma really isn't competition. And I think that that's what starts to happen is, mm-hmm. people will say the hostages. I have a friend whose uncle is a hostage right now in Gaza, and I feel deeply for her, and I want all of those people to be out and released. And I see people calling for them with fervor, and I join that. Like, I think it is. I don't think it is. It is a war crime to take civilian hostages.
Yes.
Period. Right. But the flip side of that is that there are literally thousands of Palestinians in what the Israelis call administrative detention. Yep. And I want to be clear, when I say the Israelis, I don't mean people on the street.
Right, I'm talking the about government, the government. Obviously. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Held without trial, held without charge, mm-hmm. and held indefinitely because they might possibly kind of sort of do something later, right?
Right.
Which, I don't know, like I can wrap my head around that being kind of a hostage scenario on some level as well, right? And once again, I'm not trying to get into this math of equivalency. What I'm trying to say is that what does it fundamentally gain us to create a list of all the things the Israelis have done wrong mm-hmm. and all the things that the Palestinians have done wrong? Like, there's no time machine. Nope. There's no going back. There's only forward. Right. Like we only have forward. And so given that, we have a set of options, and those options are, you know, I talked about it in the thread that you wrote,
and which is the basis of this conversation that I hope everybody reads, because it was quite brilliant. I'm sorry.
I appreciate that. Sorry. I'm deeply uncomfortable being centered in any way, but there really are only three options. We kill all the Israelis, we kill all the Palestinians, or we figure out how to live together. It really is that simple.
Yes, and there really is only number three, because one and two, not going to happen, nor should it. It's a ridiculous 100%. Concept.
Like, and that's my point. Like, the only answer is some muddling through to a coexistence. And, you know, I'll have, people jump in with, what about this and what about that? And it does not fucking matter. It really does not matter.
Right.
Have the Israelis been terrible to Palestinians? Once again, Israeli government, have they been terrible? Absolutely. Have Palestinian resistance movements been terrible to fucking Israelis?
Absolutely.
Do both of those sides feel that their behaviors are justified? Yeah. Absolutely. Is there a constituency for peace in Israel? Is there a constituency for peace in the Palestinian community? I will tell you that I don't think there is right now. But there also wasn't a constituency for peace before Oslo.
Right.
Because fundamentally, there's no hope. And that's the problem. To change something, you have to create a vision of something that's different. Right.
Yes, like, right.
I'm a lard ass, right? Like, and for me to go and work out and try to eat healthier and lose weight and do all of those things, I need some kind of motivation, whether mm-hmm. that's I need to be, you know, I want to run a marathon, I want to be healthier for my, you know, for my kids, I want to live longer, blah, whatever that might be. You need some kind of end goal, someplace that you're working towards, something that you're, there isn't one right now. Right now, you've got two sides that are fundamentally okay with what is going on. I don't think Bibi has a problem with 30 more years of fighting. I don't think Ismail Haniyeh has a problem with 30 more years of fighting. It's what they do. The conflict is their, you know, it's
yeah, but if we could take them out of the equation, you've got millions of people who are suffering, who would like a way out, who need a way out. And, you know, I remember, I'm old enough to remember, when we actively talked of a two-state solution. Is it ideal? No, but it's probably the best thing we have now. But you've got in Netanyahu, a guy who is Israel's Trump. He was voted out. I celebrated when he was voted out. I occasionally call overseas. I call hotels because I'm more likely to find somebody who speaks English. And the night when Netanyahu lost the election, I called a hotel in Tel Aviv and I got this wonderful woman on the line. And she's like, yes, we're dancing. It's the best. And we had the greatest conversation. And then he got back in. because each government works differently, and it's a parliamentary form of government there, and nobody has a majority. They form coalitions, and frankly, the people in charge now are right wing assholes.
I just want to correct.
Okay, please.
Something that a lot of people, you know, look. I think that for the most part, like I don't think that Israeli culture or the body politic is particularly liberal, and I don't think that the Israeli body politic is particularly peace focused or particularly too statey. And I think the same is true on the Arab side, right? Like, look.
No, they voted for Netanyahu, right? And there's no liberal.
There's a reason he was able to form
to get
that
back
government,
in. Right?
Like, they have their own proportional representation issues in the Knesset and all that other stuff, and that's great. And to be clear, like, I'm not operating from the basis of wouldn't it be great if wouldn't it be great if everybody just had lunch together and understood that, like. The best metaphor that I have for this, and really is the operating metaphor in my head, is that you have two children who are ranked up on candy and haven't had enough sleep and are just fighting. Yeah. And they don't even know,
why.
They don't even know how to get out of it. Right. Like, I remember at one point my son was crying to my wife because he wanted ice cream. And she gave him ice cream and he kept crying. And she said, like, why are you crying? And his response was, I don't know.
Yeah.
And I think that, like, we are both sides trapped in a cycle of, like, I don't know. Like, why are you, I talk about this in the thread. Like, everybody knows what the answer is.
Everybody knows what the answer is? Okay.
Like, the answer, like, it's two states.
Yes. There's no other solution. That is it. And why we can't work towards that. But you said it in the thread. Neither side wants to negotiate. Neither side wants to negotiate. We can say everybody's at fault here. And I won't say nobody's at fault. I'll say everybody's at fault. We have two bad actors here. But when you wrote, we're speaking with Mo Husseini. He is you're working in the entertainment industry. You're a creative guy. You do special effects and things like that. You work for George Lucas.
I used to. I'm just a creative. I'm an executive creative director in live events right now. I used to work in the film business for many years, and then I moved into agency land.
Okay. So I was drawn to your missive because it was so open-minded. You're saying the things that I say, yet I don't know what you get hit with in your private life. Now, I happen to spew my opinions these days on the internet every day, but I'm very misunderstood by the people who hear me say I support Israel's right to exist and to defend itself, whatever I say about the people trapped in Gaza, about their treatment, about everything else. And I'll take issue with the word genocide. I have friends, some former friends, some former allies in the progressive political movement who I think what Israel is doing in Gaza in response to October 7th, part of me, I get it. Part of me is, most of me, all of me is horrified by the response. I wish they could have gone in, targeted, and pulled out Hamas and left the civilians alone. This is not about that. The word genocide, I think especially for Jews, but for anybody who's been persecuted over the millennium, it takes on another meaning. And yeah, I think what Israel is doing in the firebombing of Gaza is horrific. But to me, a genocide means people are being targeted because of their race, religion, who they are as a people, who they want wiped out. And that is Hamas's mission statement, to eliminate not only the state of Israel, but every Jew from the planet. That's not how Israel feels. Am I wrong in being offended by the word genocide? Maybe offended is the wrong word.
So I stay away from the word genocide because to me, the word genocide has legal meaning.
Yes.
I'll put it this way. I think that the Israeli government has said things. I mean, today actually, Smotrich was made a call for the total annihilation of Gaza and no half measures. And we will blot out the remembrance of Amalek from under heaven.
Oh, God.
So, like, you know, I think in terms of international law, you are drifting.
That sounds like genocide. Right. That,
those words. Close to what a legal person would say is dolus specialis, right? Like in starting to fulfill the, some of the prerequisites for a judgment around genocide. Like, but once again, that's not what I'm saying. Like, someone came at me on Threads the other day about, you don't say genocide or you say genocide or whatever. And fundamentally, my response is, I don't give a shit what you fucking call it. My perspective is that the response has been disproportionate, number one. And number two, I think that there are very serious war crimes being committed by the IDF. But just to be abundantly clear about this, the same is true. Like, 10/7 is a war crime.
Yes.
In the same way, like, you cannot, like, under international law, you cannot target civilians. Like, so, you know, people will say that the Palestinians have a right to resist the occupation under international law. That is true.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Under international law, you have a right to resist an occupation that exists. That is not a right to resist the occupation by killing civilians.
No.
If Hamas wants to go at the IDF, have at it. In the context of international law, that is resistance against occupation, right? You want to go against people who are designated as soldiers, who are an arm of the state, have at it and good luck.
Yep.
But attacking civilians in any way, shape, or form, whether that's lobbing rockets into, you know, villages or whatever it may be, is a war crime.
Yes.
In the same way that, you know, like, I'm sorry, but you cannot look at what is happening in Gaza and go that, oh, well, the IDF is being very discriminate about their
choice. Oh, they're not at all. Right. Not at all.
And that's my point. Like, so, you know, is it a genocide? Is it not a genocide? Is it this? Is it that? Like, I fundamentally don't care, because that is a legal term and has implications in diplomacy and all kinds of other things. What I care about is loss of life. And what I care about is the minimization of suffering. There is great suffering right now.
Yeah, there's
great suffering in Gaza, but there was great suffering before. Like, this did, you know, when Palestinians say things like this didn't begin on October 7th, they're talking about decades and decades of, you know, the Israeli government getting more and more right wing and kind of pushing harder and harder on Palestinians.
And I can't argue with you on that, but we're also talking about decades and decades of rockets flying from Gaza into Israel. But those are the things that the protesters, and the reason you said you wrote this 55-part thread was because so many people asked you your stance. What do you think about what's going on college campuses today? It's very one-sided. You're fair. You're talking about both sides. They're both wrong. There's no right here. Right?
It would be a lot easier if someone was right.
Yes.
No. Yes. I mean it very seriously. It's refreshing to have an enemy that is absolutely 100% wrong, objectively speaking.
Yeah.
That I don't see a path that solves things for anybody that doesn't involve compromise, that doesn't involve talking to each other, that doesn't involve acknowledging the wrongs that have been done to the other. I think culturally we are not, well, maybe it's culturally is the wrong word, as humans, we're not good with admitting fault.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not good with saying, yeah, I fucked up. And we're not good with acknowledging our part in things. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I mean, you see Trump, right? And what he's doing in court right now, it's like he's never done anything wrong.
Right.
Like, there's never been a single thing that Trump has done that is wrong. It was a perfect call.
Right.
I was just paying my lawyer I didn't know that woman. I wouldn't, you know, she's ugly.
She's
anyway.
Not my like, type. All, yeah.
Like right. Whatever the heck it is. Like, it's like, I'm not, you know, there's a sense that admitting any fault is saying that you have no validity.
Right.
And I think that, you know, people would be better served by understanding that compassion is actually a great basis for discourse, for being, you know, like, here's kind of how I look at it. I wrote a very, very early after October 7th, I wrote a piece for the Daily Beast. And, you know, my perspective on it is that we need to let go of the history. And I don't mean that, like, the second you say that,
it's really hard to do. Right.
The hair on everybody's back goes up. And, you know, they like it immediately drifts into, are you telling me not to be proud of being
right? Whatever.
Insert the word Jewish or Palestinian or whatever. No, I'm not telling you that. Mm-hmm. I'm telling you that it doesn't matter, that what happened yesterday doesn't matter. And, you know, there's that proverb of, you know, the best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago. The second best time is tomorrow. I fundamentally believe that we are going to have to let go of our histories in order to move forward. And once again, I don't mean let go of them as in ignore them. I don't mean let go of them as in like, oh, great, the Holocaust didn't happen.
Right.
That's not
but
what I'm
saying.
But you
know what? Each group, each, you know, demographic, historical, you know, group, African-Americans want reparations. And there are many people who say, well, yeah, they deserve it. Jews will always remember not only the Holocaust, but the history before. You know, Palestinians will remember also the same problems, not being able to live where they are from. We all have our things, but you know what? None of us were alive when that happened, just as we weren't alive before Israel became a state. If there's a way to wipe the slate clean and say, let's start from today, let's make a lasting peace and work together, because it is the only way, as you say, that we are going to be able to move forward.
Look, 100%. And to be clear, like, I think that both sides have deep cultural problems. Mm-hmm. They really do.
Yep.
And, you know, I will tell you this, that like, as someone who is consciously focused on trying to center resolution and trying to create and find balance, I find it really interesting that when, you know, like, people will say things to me like, well, what about, like, this is what Arabs teach their children. And they'll send you some video of something happening at a school in
West
Bank.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
I've also seen the videos of what happens in religious schools in Israel. And I've seen the videos of the, you know, of the rabbis who are talking to the military about, you know, what we need to do in Gaza. Like, this is not... You know, to go back to your point earlier of like, there are no clean hands here.
None.
There's not like some utopian society on the one side and a utopian society, you know, and a non-utopian society on the other side. Mm-hmm. You have two very normal, unexceptional countries that have their fair share of religious zealots and have their fair share of right-wing extremists and have their fair share of liberals.
Yeah.
And broadly in the middle, you have a bunch of people who vote their pocketbooks or, you know,
By the propaganda that's out there. And I don't know what the media is like in the Middle East. I know here there's a big problem in that so many falsehoods or so many lies are being told to people. I do want to go back to the college issue.
Sure. Yeah.
And you know, because you seem to struggle with it. And I'll tell you something. I have a real problem with it. I think kids, I love them. I've got one who's 25 or will be next week. And they think they know everything. And yet I wish they would pick up a history book and read. And it same goes for some people in elected office, too. Look, Ilhan Omar is out there among the protesters saying, well, yeah, there are Jews with us. Look, Jews are either anti or pro-genocide. No, they are not. You're going to tell me some five-year-old kid is anti or pro-genocide? They're not. They're human beings. It's the shit that comes at them from all angles that tells them what they should believe or think. And when you frame it like that, the same thing from the river to the sea. I saw, I don't know, some show did a man on the street interview with some of the kids on these campuses protesting. What river and what sea? They had no idea. No idea. They're just echoing the things that are said to them. And right now, in this world, anyway, in the world of the college kids on campuses that are protesting, they are being fed a lot of anti-Israel stuff. They're not getting the rounded perspective that you put out there. And I think they're caught up in the crowdthink. And it goes out of proportion. Today, at Columbia, they broke into a building. It looked a lot like January 6th. This is not right. And it's supposed to be about an exchange of ideas and opinions, but it's very one-sided. And it's infuriating for anyone who tries to look at the whole picture from a wide perspective, from a wide angle.
I guess I'll disagree with you a little bit, which is to say that I think that a couple of things are true. I think, frankly, a lot of the kids have a clearer view of the world as it is. I do think that there's been plenty of very focused and very on message kind of protest. That said, I think there's a lot of incredibly disturbing kind of language and behavior. I think you'll see, like, what I talk about in the threads. I think we have a lot to learn from young kids, and by the same token, I think they have a lot to learn from us.
Yes.
I think a lot of the kids who are kind of protesting see the world in starker shades of black and white than we do. And we would probably gain some insight from looking at that, at the problem through that filter to understand kind of where they're coming from. Are there parts of the protests that are highly problematic from my perspective and not focused on, not focused on the salient issue, like
not trying to find a solution, not talking
about. And that's the thing, once again, this goes back to what are you trying to do, right? I think it, I think you have the right to protest and be angry. Yep. and make life uncomfortable for the administration and say things that people do not like. I think it is. I think it is the right of every American and certainly every student to protest and be a pain in the ass, regardless of what
Absolutely.
They believe. I just
Absolutely.
Want to be super clear about it. I think where that changes, and I talk about this in the thread, is I think it's okay to make other people uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's okay to make other people feel unsafe. I think some of the protests that I've seen have been remarkably peaceable, if very black and white and not necessarily focused on nuance. And I would say that a majority of kids are in that category.
Yeah.
I do think that there are incredibly problematic people involved. I think that there are some deeply hateful and anti-Semitic and, frankly, super counterproductive, activities and things being done. I think Columbia has turned into a shit show for all kinds of reasons.
Just thinking the same word. Yes, I agree.
And I think that the students bear some responsibility for that. I think the administration bears some responsibility for that. And I'll be honest, I think a lot of outside interference bears some responsibility for that.
Absolutely.
On all sides,
yep.
Right? Like, I think you've got, Republicans jumping in to, you know, Mike Johnson.
Showing up at Columbia.
That, man.
Right. you and me both.
I don't.
Gotcha.
You know, like, I think it's a, I think Columbia is a very different example. I don't think that, like, fundamentally, I think that if you are protesting, even if you're protesting against something, you have to be for something, right? Like, to go back to the idea of hope, like, okay, I'm just gonna, you know, like, I'm gonna exaggerate for effect, but like, okay, you do not want Israel to exist. Fine. Then what?
Right. Then what?
Like, just answer that for me, right? Like,
right.
And so what is the answer that you have for that question, right? Like, is the answer all the Israelis are gonna pack up their bags and go somewhere else? Then okay, that's also like my plan to leverage the lottery as a retirement plan.
Right, I understand, but their goal is not to have them vacate the land so they could go, so that the Palestinians can return. It's to kill all the Jews. And if you bring it over here with the crazy evangelicals, they want us all to go back to Israel so that we can be killed and they can be raptured. It's religion again. It's insane that this is what is at the root of all these people dying. And I hate to bring it down to that common denominator, but that's what
it
is.
Like, I guess I've got to disagree and say, like, I don't think it's religion. I think it is tribalism. And I think that those are very different things,
yes.
Right? Like, and don't get me wrong. I think that organized religion has all kinds of problems. And I think organized religion can create frameworks that people see the world through that really kind of distort their view of the world. And I think, you know, I just would put that aside for a moment. I don't think that what you're seeing is religion based. I really don't. I think
not on the college campuses, for sure. No,
I'm sorry.
Not on college campuses. That's for sure. I don't think it's about religion at all.
I guess. I'm sorry.
I was saying, I don't think that's about religion at all. However, I do, and I don't think most of the kids who are protesting against Israel are anti-Semitic. However, there's an awful lot of that in there. And when I hear the stories,
100%,
right,
100%. Like, look, this is my point fundamentally. It is, I think that it's all about nuance, right? Like it's all about understanding and trying to grok what people are saying. Right.
Mm-hmm,
like,
mm-hmm.
And this is my point about the blame being dispersed in situations like Colombia. Right. Like, I do think that there are, you know, I think there's a couple of problems on the student side. One is, frankly, you know, policing themselves. Right. And two is, I don't know how to say, they're letting themselves be co-opted by folks at the edges. Right.
Yes,
like,
they are.
And I think that that's true. I think the administration has been incredibly, the Columbia administration has been incredibly cack-handed. They have dealt with it in ways that almost seem designed to infuriate and inflame on some level. And you have, you know, the media and politicians on all sides jumping in to kind of make it worse.
Yeah.
And, you know, the reality to me is, you know, I went to Berkeley. I'm no stranger to protests, and I'm no stranger to being out there and feeling, you know, aggrieved for the world and all the things. But, you know, fundamentally, I think that we as the adults who are looking at these protests are onboarding risk when we over police some of the protests as well. Like, I, once again, like, similar to my position on what Israel should have done after 10/7, like, my perspective
what,
is
what should Israel have done after 10/7?
Not walked into the Hamas trap would be one part
and
of it.
And it was a Hamas trap, and they set them up to do exactly what they're doing. But
100%.
Right. But how 100%. Do you respond to atrocities
I think
they committed?
I think it is Look, you know, like I said in the thread, I think the one tiny minuscule bit of good that came out of 10-7 is the world recognizing that the situation is untenable. Beyond that, I think it's been a fucking disaster for everybody involved. What do I think Israel should have done after 10-7? I will shed exactly zero tears for Hamas being eliminated. Like, I don't find them to be a useful advocate for the Palestinian cause in any way, shape, or form.
All right.
But my response to what should Israel have done is, you know, when Israel wants to take out a very specific building in Beirut to kill a very specific person who was part of the Iranian Revolutionary Guard, they are somehow able to do that.
Yeah.
You are talking about one of the world's most powerful militaries, backed by one of the world's most powerful intelligence, structures. I think Israel knows perfectly well how to do targeted.
They do, strikes. But there's also Hamas's practice of headquarters, of putting themselves inside where civilians live. You know,
I find that I'll be honest. Like, I find that argument problematic from the standpoint that there's nowhere else to be in Gaza.
Right. I get it. There isn't there. Where else are they going to go? They don't have. OK, this is Hamas headquarters. They put themselves in the tunnels below where everybody lives. Now, how did they where'd the money come from for all those tunnels? Again, we can go in circles. And
sure. and who paid? You know, who paid and supported Hamas because they didn't want
the Palestinian Authority back in there.
Right. Yeah. And don't even get me started on the Palestinian Authority. But like fundamentally, like, you know. This is not, I guess, like, I'm not saying, like, I'm not a conspiracy theory person, and I don't play those games, but, like, I will say that I don't think that Bibi is super unhappy about the situation.
Oh, I don't think so either. And I think just like Trump believes that being in office will keep him out of jail, and it probably would, that's where Bibi is. He's under criminal indictment. He was headed for prison, but he got back in office, and it's in his personal interest, I guess, to keep this travesty going because it's going to keep him out of jail. That's not okay. Just like it wouldn't be okay for us to put Trump back in office. They need to get him the hell out of there. Again, then the question is, who do they replace him with? And if they'll rise up and get him out of there. But things cannot go on the way they are.
I fundamentally, like, my critique of the Biden administration, and to be clear, I'm voting for Joe all the way. Like, this is not, you know, this is not me saying, like, I'm not voting for Joe.
Gotcha.
Because the alternatives are execrable. But I think, like, what I want to see is my country, the United States, look at the two kids that are having a sugar rush and breaking everything and screaming and smack some bottoms and send everyone to a corner.
Right.
And say, like, all right, this is done. Like, we need to.
And I wish he had the power to do that. Now, I get you could cut off the money. That's one way. But, you know, ultimately, it's not up to Joe Biden.
I guess this is where we disagree, Nicole, because, right. Like, look, we do tell people what to do.
True. We do.
We do it all the time. And we do it with countries large and small. And woe betide the folks who don't listen. I mean, the only people we don't get to tell what to do are the Chinese and the Russians. And but for the most part, you know, the world follows America's lead. And I think America has earned that place, frankly, by, for the most part, being on the right side of history. I just think that there needs to be a moment where we tell these people that it can no longer keep going, that it's time to
stop,
put just aside the stop. Grievance,
yeah,
and start building a future, whatever that looks like, you know. And I don't really care what it looks like, as long as the average human being can wake up in their house and go to sleep in their house in a way that they're not worried about themselves all day, or worried about where their children are, or worried about the rule of law or worried about a bomb going off or, okay. or something being dropped on you or a rocket being fired or whatever it may be. And I think that the U.S. can create that hope and build a constituency for peace on both the Palestinian side and the Israeli side. There was no support for Oslo before Rabin did it.
Yeah, that's true.
There was no support for Oslo before Arafat did it.
Yep.
And it took those guys having the gravitas of being fighters for their countries.
Yeah.
And like neither one of them was some left-wing liberal peacenik, right? Like Rabin was a tough old bastard from the IDF, old school. And Arafat was a tough old bastard from the PLO. And they somehow managed to figure out Oslo. And you know what? We went from zero support for two-state and peace to all of a sudden people going like, well, this might work. Like, who knows?
Yep.
And then they killed Rabin.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
and
you know,
it was all over.
There's two movies I would like people to watch. Anybody who's listened to us for this whole hour, thank you for staying with us and caring. There was a film produced just a few years ago. I think it was around 2021, just simply called Oslo. And it is available on Max and on Prime.
Great film.
Really great film. Watch that. And if you can stomach it, go to YouTube and watch Screams Before Silence. That's Sheryl Sandberg's film about what happened on October 7th at the Nova Music Festival and in the kibbutz. Just to understand what people are feeling and to get a little taste of history. And Mo, I don't know if you have any suggestions also that people should read or watch.
The only suggestion I have for people is my push is ignore the politics and ignore the history and ignore the grievance and focus on people. Because fundamentally, I do not give a shit what the nationality of an innocent dead civilian is. I don't care if they're Jewish. I don't care if they're Palestinian. I care that they shouldn't have died. And that's basically all I care about.
Gotcha. Mo, thank you so much for being here this hour. I think it was a good discussion. We don't agree on everything, but we do agree on the big thing. They've got to stop and start talking and figure out an end game. And that goes for the kids, too. You know, I was around for Occupy Wall Street. At least they talked. They had goals. They had things they were working toward, not making demands. You do this or we'll burn the place down. That doesn't work. So
I could not agree more. I think dialogue is the way forward.
I gotcha. Mo Husseini, you've got a website, mohusseini.com, but you don't deal with this stuff there. We can follow you
not
on
at
Threads at Mohu, M-O-H-U on Threads. I don't know if you're on any other social media, but I'm finding Threads a pretty decent place to hang out, a lot better than Shitter anyway. All right.
Not a high bar, Nicole.
Not a high bar at all.
Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. It was very nice to meet you. I really, really appreciate
you.
It.
Be
okay.
Safe.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right. With that, we're done. I don't think we solved anything, but I think it shows how people can talk. People can differ in opinion and have a civilized conversation and find common ground. Right. And I look and I see I promoted what the subject was today. And sure enough, about half the amount of people that usually tune in just on Facebook. I don't know about anywhere. I mean, on YouTube. I don't know about anywhere else. But our audience is about half of what it usually is. And I guess I'll put myself in a category with Amy Schumer, where someone sees her walking out of the subway and says to her, fuck you, Amy Schumer. You're a Zionist. You love genocide. You can't win. So some other person wouldn't fight. I will fight if you come at me like that. So don't come at me like that. Let's try to talk and have a conversation. And you know what? Tomorrow, maybe we'll open the phones. I'll go over some of the news that we didn't get to today. And maybe I'll just leave space. So if you want to talk about this or anything else, we can. All right. To those of you who tuned in to hear Mo, thank you for coming. I do a show like this every day at this time, not behind any paywall. I am listener supported, so I do depend on listeners' generosity to support my work. But please tune in, share it. We're on YouTube, where I have an audio stream, an audio podcast. The video goes, it's very shareable. If you think this is a discussion that some people you know should hear, share it with them. And if nothing else, if it gets them to talk, then we've at least moved in the right direction, in the correct direction. All right. With that, I will go. We're already in overtime. Thank you, everybody. Thank you for bearing with me. And for those of you who didn't tune in because you didn't like the subject matter and I'm a genocider, you know what you can do. We'll leave it there. Peace out.